the Comic Weekly Man, the jolly Comic Weekly Man, and I'm here to read the funnies to you happy boys and honeys. Yes, boys and girls, it's Comic Weekly time, and here I come right into your house to bring a little fun and happiness right out of the pages of Puck the Comic Weekly straight into your living room, your friend the Comic Weekly Man, the jolly Comic Weekly Man.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello, hello, hello.
Well, little Miss Honey, how are you today?
Well, you should know.
You bet I do. You're happy as a jingle bell.
I certainly am, because it's Christmas week.
So it is. So let's wish everybody a merry, merry Christmas.
Yes, let's.
A merry, merry Christmas, everyone. And I hope everyone gets exactly the presents they wish to get, because if they do, it means that everyone in the world is thoughtful, and the world needs thoughtfulness to make happiness.
That's so true.
Yes.
And now the funnies, please.
Puck the Comic Weekly.
Yes.
Very well. I'll read that in just a moment. But first, let's listen to this nice man. And now here we go with Puck the Comic Weekly.
Oh, please read me Flash Gordon because it's so interesting. Flash and Dale are on a strange planet.
A planet where no one is permitted to use metal in any form.
No rockets, no guns, no watches, no nothing.
That's right, because the wizard Kurzu, a rather mean man, has outlawed metal. And the wizard and another mean man named Goro don't like Flash and Dale.
But the queen, Suni, is very nice to them.
Yes, so let's see today whether Flash has any more trouble with the wizard or with Goro. So here we go on the second page of Puck the Comic Weekly with Flash Gordon.
Magic words for the music, please.
Very well, my lady. Riga-riga-doon-doon, saskamatash. Let's have music for heroic Flash. Flash and Dale and Queen Suni come out of the wizard's cave to return to Suni's palace. Goro, the queen's general, who doesn't like Flash, looks quite surprised to see Flash and Dale still alive. Queen Suni remarks that he didn't expect them to survive their ordeals, huh? Goro frowns and says,
I still think they'll bring you disaster.
They all head for the palace. Flash asks Queen Suni, well, if the ray dissolves all metal, how can we live without calcium for our bones? Queen Suni tells him that many people died before the wizards had reduced the ray and made it very weak. So now it doesn't hurt them or cause landslides because it only works beneath the surface of the earth and mining is forbidden. She tells Flash that the wizards hate progress and civilization, and that Kurzu said he would end poverty and war by destroying metal from which cannon and bullets are made. But still her people have to work all day and night just to eat. They still fight with arrows and sharp sticks, while savage beasts roam the land. At this moment, last picture of the row, a huge, vicious animal waits behind a rock, ready to leap upon the people approaching. First picture, bottom row. As they come near it, it roars. Goro shouts,
On guard, your majesty, a fanged dragon!
Bravely, he turns his panicky mount toward the monster. But Goro's lance is no match for the dragon. And Flash leaps from his terrified mount, shouting, Ride for your lives! But the fear-crazed steeds break loose, throwing Sunny and Dale. Flash, without any weapons, dashes at the monster who has now thrown Goro and is pinning him to the ground with his powerful claws as he bares his fangs at Flash.
Oh, just see what that old wizard did. If Flash had a ray pistol, he could shoot that dragon and save everyone.
Well, next week we'll find out if Flash figures out some way to defeat the dragon.
Oh, I hope he will.
Yes. Well, now...
Oh, now, please, across the page to Dick's adventures. Dick is in the early days of America.
And he's dreaming that he's in Philadelphia on the 4th of July.
Yes, and that he met Benjamin Franklin, who was a wonderful man in the early days of America. He flew a kite and invented electricity.
Yes, and many other things. So now let's read and see what happens today in Dick's Adventures. Say the magic words with me.
Riggity-pack-a-zack-a-zick.
Let's have music for Adventurous Dick. Dick is dreaming his wonderful dream. It's July 4th, 1776, Independence Day, and in Philadelphia. Dick wonders, but why is nobody celebrating? Then from the doorway of a small print shop, Dick hears his name called. He recognizes Benjamin Franklin. Dick goes to Franklin's shop. Mr. Franklin says,
I see you are attached to General Washington's militia, Corporal. Please deliver this to the general. It has just been approved.
Glance at it.
Dick takes the document, which is a piece of paper, unrolls it, looks at it last picture top row, and starts to read.
What in the course of human events?
Oh, gosh! It's a Declaration of Independence!
A few minutes later, mounted on a horse, first picture next row, Dick rides through wildly cheering crowds. Here is the first glorious fourth. High over the shouting, a great bell is thundering the momentous news of American freedom. Dick cries,
"The Liberty Bell!"
And he continues on his way to carry the Declaration of Independence. George Washington's in New York, readying his men for a defense of the city. The ride from Philadelphia is long, and late that night, Dick stops at an inn. He finds, last picture of the row, that the inn is a nest for Tories, men bitterly opposed to American independence. The waitress warns that he be careful, because the Tories would slit his throat if they think that he's carrying military information. Dick replies cheerfully,
"I am, but they can read it."
And then, first picture, bottom row, Dick goes to the fireplace, holds up the paper, and says to the Tories,
"The information in this paper is going to make our soldiers fight like wildcats."
And then he reads it to them in a voice ringing with defiance.
When in the course of human events...
Next morning, last picture, Dick's on his way an hour before dawn, continuing his journey to Washington's headquarters in New York. As he thinks about the night before, when he read the Declaration of Independence to the Tories, who were people in America, on England's side, and how much they didn't like it, Dick laughs and says to himself,
"They didn't appreciate it much."
Oh, isn't that thrilling? The Declaration of Independence. That was when the Americans wrote down on the paper that they wanted to be free from England.
That's right. That was one of the most famous documents in the history of the world, because it was the first time a group of men stated that everybody in the world should have a free government. A government that would be a good government to everybody.
And just think, it happened right here in America.
Yes.
Oh, look, underneath Dick's adventures, here's Rusty Riley.
Oh, yes, and this is really becoming something interesting, too, because Rusty, who was trying out a boat, got marined out in the harbor.
And then he saw the smugglers come, and they were doing something with a black light.
Yes, and then the Coast Guard cruiser came along and searched the smugglers, but they didn't find anything.
And then they saw Rusty and Patty, and they rescued them and brought them home again. But I'm still wondering about that black light. What is a black light?
Well, Tex gave Rusty a magazine that had an article about a black light in it. So let's see what we can find out right now. Here we go with Rusty Riley. Gallop and run till the road is dusty. Give us music for his horse and Rusty. Patty, Rusty's friend, daughter of Mr. Miles, sees that Rusty's reading a magazine, and she asks,
"What are you reading in that science magazine, Rusty?"
"Oh, it's an article Tex gave me to read. It's all about black light."
"Huh? Black light?"
"Sure. Don't you remember? We heard one of those men on that strange boat say something about black light. Well, this article tells all about it. Must be a queer sort of a thing, because it says here that it's invisible unless it shines in a certain kind of chemical, and then it makes that chemical glow real bright."
"Jeepers, that sounds spooky. But what could those men on the boat use it for?"
Then Rusty puts on his jacket, last picture top row, saying,
"Well, let's go down to the boathouse and ask Mr. Tony, our teacher. He knows about all kinds of things."
"All right, Rusty, let's go."
First picture next row, down by the waterfront, they go into the boathouse where Tony had been painting lobster pot markers, which are huge corks floating above the water, marking the spots where the lobster pots are at the bottom of the ocean. And Patty says,
"Golly, Mr. Tony isn't here. I thought he'd be painting some of those lobster pot markers."
"Well, his paints and his brushes are all here. Hey, let's paint a name on our skiff while we're here, huh?"
So Rusty picks up a can of the paint and a brush, and they walk out to the boat. And Rusty paints the name Polly on his boat. Rusty says,
"He says misto tint in this can. Well, anyway, it's a nice bright red. There, how's that look, huh?"
"Fine, Rusty, but it's time for supper. We can come down and put the name on the other side tonight.
After supper that night, Rusty goes down to the boat to paint the name on the other side. He calls to Patty, who's still in the boathouse.
Hey, golly, it's pretty dark for painting outside here, Patty. We need a light.
And Patty calls back.
Oh, wait a second. Here's something that looks like a kind of a spotlight. It's got a long cord. I'll bring it out.
So Patty comes out carrying the thing that looks like a spotlight. She clicks the switch and says, last picture.
It must be broken or burnt out, Rusty. I switched it on, but it doesn't light.
Suddenly, Rusty sees the name Polly, which he'd painted on the boat earlier in the afternoon, is shining as though it were put on in electric lights. And he exclaims,
burnt out nothing. Look at the name we painted on the skiff. It's black light.
Oh, so that's what the black light is. It doesn't show any light like a real light.
No, it's invisible unless it shines on a certain kind of chemical, like Rusty read in the magazine.
And when that invisible light is aimed at the then it makes it real bright.
Yes, and the paint that Rusty put on the boat had the chemical in it, and that's why the name is Bright.
Isn't it mysterious?
Yes. Now?
Now will you read that luck for me?
I will right away if you'll turn over the page.
And there he is in the middle of page 5.
So here we go with Donald Duck. Say the magic words for the music with me. Squeegem, squeegem, squiddly chicka-chack. Let's have music to fit a quack, quack. Donald looks out the window, and he sees something that makes him angry. And he yells to his nephews.
Boy, come here.
And in a second, his three nephews are in the room. And Donald points out the window to the walk, which is covered with snow, and he barks.
I thought you boys promised to keep the walk shovel this winter.
And his nephews say cheerfully,
Sure, Uncle Donald. We get started tomorrow.
And Donald says angrily,
Tomorrow. That's what you said yesterday.
And his nephews go back to play. Donald begins to think. He thinks and thinks. And then he has a bright idea. Last picture, top row, he's made a phone call and is just finishing his conversation, saying,
And send him out right away, immediately.
First picture, bottom row, some delivery men are bringing three boxes, in a truck to Donald's house. And one of them says to Donald,
Well, here they are, Mr. Duck.
Donald replies,
Bring them right in.
And the men bring the boxes into the kitchen floor. Donald starts to open the boxes. His three nephews come running into the kitchen, and Donald says,
Look, boy, I need a little surprise.
And 2 seconds later, the front door pops open, and out the door dash Huey, Dewey, and Louie, all carrying shovels, and they shovel the snow off the sidewalk as fast as they can. Last picture, his nephews are riding their bicycles on the sidewalk, which is now shovel clean, while Donald sits in the house reading a book with a sly smile on his face.
That was very smart of Donald. When his nephews got the bicycles, they just had to shovel the snow off so they could ride the bicycles. I would do that, too.
Well, I should think you'd shovel the sidewalk so your mother wouldn't get her overshoes filled.
Yes. But it's hard for children to remember these things sometimes.
Yes, I suppose, but they should try.
Yes, they should try, especially at Christmas, because sometimes you get bigger presents.
Oh, you.
It's true.
Well, what should we read now?
Oh, since you read my friend Donald Duck, will you read my other friend, Uncle Remus? I just love Bear Rabbit so.
I certainly will if you'll turn over the page.
Oh, goody. Here he is, under Tilly the Toilet.
And I'll read that in just a moment. But first, here's that nice man again with something interesting to say. Now, here we go again with Puck the Comic Weekly. And on the bottom of the 6th page of the first section of Puck the Comic Weekly is Uncle Remus and his Tales of Br'er Rabbit.
Magic words for the music, please.
And say them with me. Hippity-hoppity, make it a habit to give us music for old Br'er Rabbit. Uncle Remus says,
Most times when Br'er Rabbit gets lazy in the bones, he gets mighty super in the head.
Yes, and this is one of the days when Br'er Rabbit needs to get super in the head, for his lawn is completely overrun with tall, tall grass, and it needs a cutting. Just then, Br'er Bear and Br'er Buzzard come by, and Br'er Buzzard stops and says,
I sees you is finally getting round to cutting your grass.
And Br'er Rabbit replies cheerfully,
Oh, I ain't cutting grass. I's looking for something. I's got a hole in my pocket, and I done lost $11 gold piece.
Last picture, top row. Br'er Bear asks,
Is you giving any reward for the finding?
And Br'er Rabbit cheerfully says,
Yeah, I split half with the man what finds it.
And by the time you can go, Br'er Bear and Br'er Buzzard have dashed home for their sights and are cutting Br'er Rabbit's grass. First picture, bottom row. Finally, the grass is all cut, but no one has found the $11 gold piece. And Br'er Bear, looking very disappointed, says,
Is you sure you lost it in this field?
And Br'er Buzzard moans,
Us is almost skunt the place clean.
And Br'er Rabbit reaches in his back pocket and says cheerfully,
Oh, hey, fellas, wait a minute. Well, what do you know about that? I found it in my hip pocket.
And when the others see it, they all go. And Br'er Bear exclaims,
They're not work for nothing.
And Br'er Buzzard growls,
I is disbusted.
And last picture, they all walk down the road. Br'er Bear says,
Something ain't right about this.
And Br'er Buzzard exclaims,
In his pocket all the time. Nah.
And Br'er Rabbit flips the coin, happily saying,
Well, that's one way of getting the grass cut.
And Uncle Remus says,
Sharp mind is just as sharp blade.
Oh, that smart little Br'er Rabbit. He fooled Br'er Bear and Br'er Buzzard again.
Yes, he certainly did. Well, now shall we have some rootin' tootin' excitement?
Oh, yes, if it's Roy Rogers.
It certainly is.
Oh, I'm anxious to read that because Roy passed by an old Indian fort and he saw an old man wearing a coonskin cap shooting at a boy.
And Roy whipped out his lariat, pulled the old man off his horse and saved the boy from being shot.
Yes, but just then the boy jumped into the river.
And as Roy ran to help the boy, the old man got loose, grabbed up a gun.
Oh, hurry up and read, will you?
Very well, then. Go to the last page of the first section of the Comic Weekly, and here we go with Roy Rogers, King of the Cowboys. Hi-yip-hi-yo. Now here we go with Roy and Trigger. Hi-yip-hi-yo. Roy prepares to dive into Rapid River to save the boy from the treacherous water. The evil old man pulls up his gun, aims at Roy, and growls,
I'll learn that cowpoke to mind his own business.
Pulls the trigger, last picture, top row, just as Roy dives into the river. First picture, next row. He misses Roy, who comes up beside the boy. Roy sees the log being carried straight at him by the swift current, and he calls, Watch out, that log! The boy exclaims,
Hey, you trying to drown me?
Last picture, the row, Roy grabs the boy and says, Here, I've got you, sonny. We'll make it okay. First picture, bottom row, they grab the log as it comes by them, and they hang on to it. Roy says,
Hey, that Jasper above is still shooting at us. Stay behind the log until we get ashore.
The boy replies,
He chased me out of old Fort Havoc, but he won't get away with it.
Up on the top of the ledge, overhanging the river, the old-timer takes another shot at Roy. He growls,
I don't know how much the kid found out at the fort, but I ain't taking no chances on him. Or that nosy cowpoke, neither.
He shoots again. And just at this moment, a man gallops up on a horse. He jumps off and grabs the old-timer, last picture, exclaiming, Drop that gun, you trigger-happy maverick!
Oh, goody, goody. Roy and the boy won't be shot now. That man saved them.
He certainly did.
I wonder who he is.
Well, next week we'll find that out. But now...
Naturally, the next comic to read is Dagwood and Blondie. And here they are on the first page of the second section of Puck the Comic Weekly.
So, naturally, here we go with Dagwood and Blondie. Ram-a-foo, ram-a-fum, zim-zam-zombie. Conjure me music for Dagwood and Blondie. As
Dagwood gets home that evening, he tells Blondie, I missed my bus. I was late for work again this morning. Blondie tells him he's apt to lose his job. And that gives Dagwood something to think about during dinner. That evening, Dagwood, who's been sitting in a chair while Blondie's been reading the paper, suddenly jumps up. He exclaims,
I just worked out a new shortcut to the bus that'll save me 2 minutes in the morning.
And last picture top row, Dagwood is ringing a neighbor's doorbell. He says to Daisy, his dog, who's with him,
I'm sure the neighbors will help me with this. They're all such nice people, and I've known them for so long.
First picture next row, Dagwood is pointing to the neighbor's fence, and he says to his neighbor,
Mr. Squirp, if you would remove these boards from your fence, I could cut through your yard.
And the neighbor replies cheerfully, I'll do that for you, Dagwood. And that's the first step in Dagwood's plan. Then Dagwood goes to another neighbor, and he's pointing to the hedge that's at the edge of their lawn, and is saying,
Now, if you folks would cut your hedge enough for me to leap over.
Last picture of the row, some other neighbors are carrying rocks from one end of their lawn to the other end. The missus is saying,
We're moving our rock garden so it won't be in Dagwood's way.
And another neighbor calls back as she winds up her clothesline.
Yes, and I'm taking down my clothesline so he won't strangle himself when he comes through here.
Next morning, Blondie calls Dagwood, telling him it's time to get up. Dagwood pops out of bed saying,
I can't wait till I see how my new shortcut's going to work.
And after breakfast, he tears out of the house. Dashes through the hole in the neighbor's fence saying,
Oh boy, this is wonderful. The neighbors are all cooperating.
Last picture of the row, he leaps the other neighbor's hedge saying,
How sweet are the wrangles to cut a hole in their hedge for me. Such nice people.
First picture bottom row, he dashes through the other neighbor's lawn where the rock garden's been removed, saying,
I feel as free as an antelope on the prairies. Nothing to obstruct me.
And then down he goes under the sidewalk at the corner and says,
Here I am at the bus stop with 30 seconds to spare. I'll never be late for work again.
And he stops, last picture, in front of a sign which is put up at the bus stop. The sign reads,
Notice, starting today, this bus line has been rerouted to Swithin Street, 2 blocks north.
And Dagwood feels just like this.
Poor Dagwood. After all the cooperation he had from his neighbors and all of his good plans, he's going to be late for work today because the bus doesn't stop at that corner today.
Yes, poor Dagwood has the kind of luck so many of us have. When he tries to make something work out one way, just the opposite happens.
I'm afraid so.
Yes. Well, now it's time for Prince Valiant.
Oh, that's easy to find, too. It's on the last page of the second section.
So here we go over to the last page.
And this is really exciting, because Prince Valiant and his friends had stayed overnight at a castle, and the next morning, when they were going to leave, the castle was attacked, and they couldn't get out.
And for days, the attackers had tried to break into the castle to capture it. But so far, they've been unsuccessful.
And then the king of the castle said that they would have to have a messenger to go for more help. I'm just wondering whether Prince Val is going to try to do this dangerous thing.
And it is dangerous, because the messenger will have to try to slip through the enemy's camp. So let's read now and find out who is going to be the messenger. Here we go with Prince Valiant. Eckert, Breckert, Grey Malkin, and Quince. Music romantic for a fair, fair prince. From high in the keep, Prince Valiant searches for a way by which a messenger can escape. But they're completely surrounded. And when the fighting wanes at sunset, sentries mount guard, completely surrounding the castle moat. As Val looks out at the moat, which is a sort of a river of water around the castle, he thinks that a swimmer might cross it. But even here, the sentries stand almost shoulder to shoulder. And then Val grins, and then laughs aloud. And he calls for some very unwarlike materials. Last picture top row, Val ties a long rope to a grapple, which is a stick with 4 curved hooks tied to its tip. Then men bring empty wine jugs and begin to tie them to long bars. Then a pulley and a rope are tied to the end of the grapple, and first picture next row, the grapple with pulley and line attached is shot across the moat amid a shower of arrows. As the arrows fired by Val's companions spin toward the enemy across the moat, the enemy sentries cower behind their shields. They don't see the grapple with a rope and pulley attached as it lands on the shore and digs into the ground. The rope attached falls in the water and sinks underneath unseen. That night,
A water gate, which opens onto the moat from the castle where Val and his friends are, is opened, and men, carrying the 50 empty wine jugs, slip out into the water, tie the wine jugs to the rope attached to the grapple, which is stuck in the earth across the moat on the enemy side. Then slowly, the bobbing jugs are pulled by means of the pulley across the dark water toward the enemy sentries. A few minutes later, the moon breaks through the clouds. An enemy sentry, seeing the wine jugs bobbing in the water, thinks it's a head of soldiers wearing helmets, and he yells,
"Swimmers approaching! Help! An attack!"
The enemy sentries all rush to the danger spot, and at that moment, a messenger who's been swimming quietly in the water at a place far from the wine jugs finds ample room to slip out of the water and speed on his way unnoticed. Everyone laughs at Val's trick, but in the morning, there's no joy, for they see, last picture, that the most feared device in warfare is growing steadily beneath the walls.
What is the most feared thing?
That's something we'll find out next week.
All right, I'll wait, but wasn't that a wonderful scheme of Val's? To make the sentries think that a lot of men were coming in one place so that the enemy all gathered there and then they didn't really see the messenger.
That was a brilliant idea.
Yes, it was. I just love Prince Valiant because he's a hero and so bright.
He certainly is. Now, that's all the time I have. But before I go, here's that nice fellow with some more interesting information. Well, honey, and all you boys and girls, I've got to go now.
All right, Mr. Carnegie Man, but I'll be waiting for you next week.
Okay, that's a date, and a date with all you boys and girls. Be sure to meet me with our little friend Miss Honey next week when I read Puck the Comic Weekly. For I'm the Comic Weekly Man, the jolly Comic Weekly Man. I'll be back to read the funnies to you happy boys and honey. Don't forget, boys and girls, see you all next week. Your friend, the Comic Weekly Man, the jolly Comic Weekly Man.